The following is a recording of the Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. We are located in Collegeville, Pennsylvania. We are also located on the web at www.tpuuf.org. Please come visit us.
Stand against the Arctic sky. The wind blows through the graveyard where our fallen fathers lie. The timeless hunt, the journey back.
Good morning from Thomas Paine Unitarian Universal Fellowship in Collegeville, Pennsylvania. For those of you on Zoom, we are also as close as your home. Apologize for starting a little late, but I had a little accident beforehand. So I'm gonna sit for the whole thing, okay? So we are a Unitarian Universalist congregation dedicated to challenging the mind, nurturing the spirit, and transforming the world. We are a place to grow where everyone belongs. I am Joanne Walker, and I want to personally welcome you this morning. Wherever you are on your life journey, wherever you are on your spiritual journey, whomever you love, whatever your gender, identity, or expression, we welcome you into our circle of compassion and caring. Today, our service explores pantheism, which, depending upon your point of view, is either a religion or a philosophy of life that reveres and cares for nature. Some consider pantheism to be the oldest religion on earth. Before the established religions existed, before Christianity, Buddhism, Islam, Judaism, human beings articulated their need to worship through the earth. In other words, people venerated nature instead of deities. The spirit was alive, diffused through all of nature, and humans felt one with nature. I chose this topic for our service because I find peace in nature. When I am feeling down or lost, I look to immerse myself in the natural world. The trees, the birds, all of it. I love the quiet of the early morning when I walk my dog, when it is just the two of us, and the quiet is interrupted only by the song of birds. I think that I have quite a bit of pantheist in me. So what exactly is pantheism? In essence, it holds that the universe as a whole deserves the deepest reverence, and that only the universe and nature are worthy of that degree of reverence. Pantheists do not see nature as something for humans to use or manipulate. Currently, we are in the midst of the holiday season, a time of waiting, a time of hope, and a time of joy. As we move through the service today, I urge you to consider the impact of nature upon humanity as a whole and upon yourself as an individual. Likewise, what is your impact upon nature? Have we revered the earth? Are we aware of how our lives affect the planet and its resources? Do you honor the life of all living things, the order of nature, the riches of our world? Do we gently walk upon this earth? Please keep these questions in mind as we proceed. Our chair slating today, Ann Rostowski is going to read and Cindy Westfall is going to light the chalice.
So you may have heard this before. It's "We Belong to the Earth," attributed to, it's not a misspelling, Chief Noah Sioux, and that's the in his Native American language, that's how it's pronounced, even though you'll often see it as Seattle, Chief Seattle. That's how we Englished or Americanized it, I guess you would say. "This we know, the earth does not belong to us. We belong to the earth. This we know, all things are connected, like the blood which unites one family. All things are connected. Whatever befalls the earth befalls the sons and daughters of the earth. We did not weave the web of life. We are merely a strand in it. Whatever we do to the web, we do to ourselves." And now we will do the peace lamp. So if you can repeat after me, or join in reading the response. May peace be with us.
And with all the people of the world.
Also today, don't go away, Cindy.
Also today, we have our lighting the third candle of the Advent wreath, which is down there. Advent is a season of hope, celebration, and remembrance that takes place in the 4 weeks leading up to Christmas. So today we will light, the pink candle is the third candle, so two purples and one pink. And the third candle of Advent is known as the Shepherd's Candle, and it symbolizes joy. Thank you. Our gathering song today is "Blue Boat Home" by John Mayer. Please rise either in body or spirit as we welcome this new day and consider the earth as our home.
give thanks to the waves upholding me. Hail the great winds urging me on. Greet the infinite sea before me. Sing the sky my sailor's song. I was born upon the fathoms. Never harbor or port have I known. The wide universe is the ocean I travel, and the earth is my blue boat home. The wide universe is the ocean I travel, and the earth is my blue.
This week, Linda Weaver is going to read The Invisible Web.
Okay. Do any of our children want to come up and help? If they do, fine, I'll grab a chair. And if not, okay, they're busy with projects, so I'm going to push this little step in. And I'm going to read from here, and you're going to see the pages appear on the screen. The story I'm going to read is The Invisible Web. And I love the way we pick stories that it is a moment for all ages, because I'm in advanced years. I'm 72, and I enjoyed this story. And I think our youngsters will enjoy it as well. The Invisible Web. The very best news ever has begun to spread all over the world, one heart at a time. Shout it from the mountaintops. Every single one of us is connected to those we love by invisible strings. That means Giovanna and her daddy are always together, even though he moved to a new house. Omar can feel the tugs of love from his parents, even though he is living far away at school. Mr. Chang still feels Mrs. Chang close by, even though she died such a very long time ago. And you, at this very moment, may feel the string of someone close to you, even though they aren't there. You can't see it, but it's real. Our strings reach to everyone we know. They travel far and wide to families and friends, classmates and coaches, to bus drivers and babysitters, neighbors and pets, to aunts and uncles and grandparents and grandchildren and countless other people. And all of those people have hundreds of strings. Soaring high over rocky peaks and across the seven seas, deep into jungles and valleys, and winding through the busiest of cities, all these strings crisscross one another and create a nest that covers the planet, interlacing us together, cradling us forever, the invisible web. And by the way, this is how the page looks in the book, so you have to turn it this way. Slides didn't work that way, so that's why they look the way they did. The web has no borders and wraps every continent. Within it live butterflies and flowers, starfish and seahorses, lions and ants, rivers and snowstorms, and all human beings. Giovanna, Omar, Mr. Chang, and of course, you and me too. Some say it even reaches to our ancestors and those we cherish in the beyond. One tug on a string sends love to every one of us woven together in this divine tapestry. And that means just one good deed travels across the entire web. Everything is linked. Even violence, oops, wait a minute, I skipped a page. But sometimes folks forget. When they can't feel their strings, they forget about our invisible web. And that's when strings get tangled up. Like when lonely Louisa isn't invited to sit with anyone at her school at lunchtime. Or when sad Stefano wishes his friend Marcos wasn't so bossy when they played. Or when Mrs. Patel struggles at work without help and she just wants to quit. Even violence and war can erupt when too many of us forget the web. When strings are ignored, they become weak and begin to unravel. But the more people who care for the web, the stronger it remains. The web feels like every parent since the beginning of time, holding and protecting each one of us in millions of gentle arms. What could be stronger than all those hands holding us close? So many supportive fingers can always find a way to untangle strings so that love can flow again. But it's up to every one of us to spread the word. Our time is right now. As we tell our family and friends, sisters will remind brothers, who will write to cousins, who will call their great grandparents, who will just nod and smile as if they've always known. If we remember the web and tug at it often, nobody will ever be left out. We will see others more clearly. The people of the world will look into each other's eyes. They will smile at one another. And when one of them cries, they will all want to help. And they do. Marcos apologizes to Stefano, who forgives his friend, and they have even more fun playing. Someone helps Mrs. Patel at work and tells her what a great job she's doing. She remembers that she's important and feels happy. And Louisa feels warm and bubbly inside when a few of the kids in class ask her to join them under the banyan tree for lunch. She knows right then that the invisible web is real. After school, Louisa cries with joy as she strokes her cat, who purrs the news to the stars, and the stars whisper the secret to the clouds, who share it with the songbirds, who serenade the world with this exquisite melody of love at the start of each morning and all during the day, until, as the invisible web glitters in the magic of twilight, the owls take over and hoot the news throughout the night. The invisible web is alive. Its time is right now. It breathes as we breathe, pulsating all over the earth, the single heartbeat of life and love. And do you know what that makes us all? One very big family. And then this was the note from the author. P.S. I just love being right here in the very middle of the invisible web with you, Patricia Karst, dedicated to the real World Wide Web. Thank you.
So we'll do our children's recessional. Now in peace, oh now in peace, may the surround you everywhere, everywhere you may go. Okay. So I had a reading that I was going to do, but I think because we started late, I'll skip that part. And so, nature, it uplifts the spirit, opens the world of spiritual beauty and holiness to us. Nature calls upon our imagination to see the world in diverse ways. It calls upon us to accept what is and imagine what could be. And as I worked on this service, I found all kinds of memories and thoughts rolling around in my mind. For years, every summer, my parents and I would drive to South Carolina to visit my brother and his family. On the long, boring ride, I would often lay on the back seat, no seatbelts back then, and gaze out the back window, imagining all kinds of shapes and meanings in the clouds as they moved through the sky. I also imagined that there were cities in the clouds where everything was peaceful and bright. It was very calming and soothing, and it kept me occupied. Years later, N.C. Wyeth's painting, The Giant, hung on the wall in my doctor's office. If you're not familiar with it, The Giant portrays a group of children on the beach gazing up at a dark cloud shaped like a giant with a club. But around the giant is a white cloud, which to me was shaped like an angel, protecting the children. I often found that painting calming and soothing as well, so much so that I now have it, a print of it in my home. One evening last week, as I was writing this, the cartoon Santa Claus is Coming to Town was on the television. There's this scene at the end, which is so beautiful and truly reflects the spirit of pantheism. Kris Kringle and Jessica, the soon-to-be Mrs. Kringle, get married in the forest. The birds and other creatures of the forest have decorated a beautiful tree. The snow is gently falling, and the narrator describes how they said their vows by standing silently in the woods with the animals as their witnesses. The winter warlock asks for just a little magic, and the tree lights up in the night, glistening in the fresh snow. And the narrator says, "No church ever looked nicer." They were in nature's cathedral. And finally, now don't laugh, as I was putting on the final touches, this popped into my head. Those of you who are older might remember this TV show. There was an episode of Lost in Space where the Robinsons landed on a planet whose only occupants were plants. And as the family is clearing away some plant growth with a machete, with every whack, there is a shrill and whining sound, because the plants are feeling the pain as they're hit. And the plants are led by a giant carrot man. Now, remember, this was a long time ago, so no computer effects. He was actually a guy in a carrot suit who tries to make the Robinsons understand that all living things have feelings. So all of this was on my mind as I continued on. And I thought, oh, they're going to say, what does this have to do with pantheism? And I thought about it, and I thought, well, pantheism is a spiritual path that doesn't just respect nature and the universe, it reveres it. It sees all life as part of a community. Pantheists care for nature and revel in its beauty. They wonder at its mystery and power, and how the web of life connects all things, whether human, animal, insect, microbe, or totally unknown entity as of now. As we proceed today, I'd like to keep in mind Unitarian Universalism's seventh principle, respect for the interdependent web of all existence of which we are a part. Consider whether this is related to pantheism. How do you incorporate the seventh principle into your life? Many UUs consider this the environmental principle, but is it more? Are UUs in part pantheists? Pantheism is a joyous approach to life. Unlike many organized religions, pantheists do not view this life as a waiting room on the way to some better existence after death. They are free from the judging God of other religions. They are liberated to experience the world with a sense of awe, wonder, and respect, and not with fear of malice. They believe that nature is not something to be used or manipulated by humans. The other inhabitants of the earth are not here for us to use or abuse as well. In the pantheistic view, nature created us all, and we are all inseparable from it. Nature is neither good nor evil, although humans often characterize it that way. And pantheists generally embrace science, something that I think is going to be an issue for a while. They seek to understand the universe and the life around them. Some of the world's greatest thinkers and writers were pantheists. Ralph Waldo Emerson, in his 1836 essay on nature, wrote, "In the woods, we return to reason and faith. There, I feel that nothing can befall me. In life, no disgrace, no calamity, which nature cannot repair. Standing on the bare ground, my head bathed in the blithe air and uplifted into infinite space, all mean egotism vanished. I become a transparent eyeball. I am nothing." Similarly, D.H. Lawrence, one of the greatest English novelists of the 20th century, in my view, wrote in a privately published book that was only one paragraph long, "This is how I save my soul, by accomplishing a pure relationship between me and another person, me and other people, me and the animals, me and the trees or flowers, me and the skies and sun and stars, me and the moon, an infinity of pure relationships that makes our eternity for each one of us. This, if we knew it, is our life and our eternity, the subtle, perfected relation between me and my whole universe." And Albert Einstein, one of the greatest scientists of the 20th century, again, in my opinion, was a pantheist. Best known for his theory of relativity, Einstein saw the higher power as order and harmony and the law of the universe itself. To Einstein, science was, in a sense, a religious quest. He wrote, "What I see in nature is a magnificent structure that we can comprehend only very imperfectly, and that must fill a thinking person with a feeling of humility. This is a genuinely religious feeling that has nothing to do with mysticism." Many pantheists combine their pantheistic beliefs with other religions or philosophies. I kind of think that is what I do. I incorporate this reverence and respect of nature into other ways that I approach life. Mostly, I pick up bugs and take them outside, okay? Mostly. I don't do that with roaches. And I used to like pouring the salt on the slugs. They were gross, until my son came home from school in second grade and told me we can't do that anymore because the slugs are the decomposers of life. So now I just let them be. I also don't spray my weeds with anything. Dandelions, who decided dandelions were a weed? Bees like them. So I try to incorporate all of this into what I do every day. I find the natural world around me to be both intriguing and soothing. As I mentioned, walking my dog in the early morning hours, I am often hit with this silence. How quiet it can be when there is no one else awake and no one else around you. And the color of the sky, especially on a clear day like we had yesterday, not only intrigues me, but often also reminds me of other days and other experiences. Have you ever noticed how many shades of blue the sky can be? And during the pandemic, did anyone else notice that the sky was bluer than it had ever been in your lifetime? Why? Because humans weren't polluting it as much because we weren't driving. I've never been able to find the words to describe all these shades of blue, and I kind of hope I don't, because each time I'd have to find a new word. In pantheism, we are no more and no less significant than anything else in the universe. Everything is dwarfed by the whole, but the whole is made up by its parts. Sounds like philosophy 101. We don't exist in isolation, and we are seeing more and more evidence of the effects of humans' interaction with nature. Humans have been a scourge upon the planet. We are now clearly seeing those impacts: climate change, droughts, oppressive heat, increasingly violent storms, wildfires, and so much more. We'll eventually probably notice it when we don't have heat and when we don't have food, because that's when people tend to take action, right at the last minute. But at least some of us are seeing what pantheists saw all along, that we are living in a world of a complex interacting whole, that nature is part of our being. Now think back to our seventh principle. Has your view changed a bit at all? Are you questioning what it means? Has the view of it expanded a little bit? I hope that the service today leaves you thinking more deeply on this principle and also questioning how each of us interacts with the web around us. Now we'll go to matters of the heart. I think that Cindy is going to handle that. I'm all right.
Good morning, I'm Cindy Westfall. We are a fellowship, a community with friendship and relationship at its heart. We hold love and care for each other as the burning ember of our purpose. We embody the importance of care for each other every week as we set aside time for sharing the matters of our hearts. If you have a sorrow or a joy that you would like to share with us in this beloved community, I invite you to come forward and share briefly, or not briefly, either one is fine, into the microphone to the right, your left. Those of you who are online can raise your hand, and you will be unmuted if you wish to share. And please start with your name. Thank you, everyone, for sharing. I did not mention that I'm part of the care team, too. So we are amongst you and in your midst and here to take care of you. I wanted to just get back to nature a little bit to bring everything together, is that nature speaks to us, right, if we listen. So the other day I was at the dentist and I did not want to get x-rays. And so I told them, I'm not getting x-rays. And he said, you haven't gotten x-rays in 5 years. And I said, I just don't want any. And he got really mad at me, like angry. And I said, you know what? I think I'm just gonna go. I didn't get my teeth cleaned. I just said, I gotta go, because I wasn't comfortable with him being so angry at me and then putting his fingers in my mouth, right? So I'm driving home. This is the nature part of it. I'm driving home. No, you don't have short-term memory. I'm definitely deflecting and going down the rabbit hole, but I'm driving home. And I'm like, I don't know if that was the right thing to do. I don't know if that was very kind and loving. Maybe he's having a bad day. It's, you know, maybe it wasn't a good thing to do for that. Maybe that was mean. And I looked up at that moment, and there were three bald eagles flying right over me. Three in a row. One, two, three. Because they don't go in a circle. They go straight. And if you look at the meaning of eagles, because a lot of times I'll look to see what the meaning of an animal is. Crows signify change. Eagles signify direction. And they were flying north, true north. So to me, I took that as it was okay. So we'll take a moment to reflect and then get back to the rest of the service. Thank you.
We will bring this time of sharing to a close by singing Spirit of Life. That will show up here on the screen in just a second.
think they had the concussion too. I actually didn't realize how slow that was when I chose it, but I just like the pictures, you know? So, so before we start the closing song, I just wanted to like say to you guys, like, this is kind of old and it's from a movie and it's, some people think it's corny, but it popped into my head when I was working on this. And it, my dad took me to see this movie when it first came out in 1966. And my dad didn't do things like that. But he really liked all the, back then there were tons of nature things going on and there was Mutual of Omaha's, you know, Animal Kingdom and stuff like that. So every time I hear this, I think of him and I just decided that this was a good closing song. So it's Born Free, and it, music is by, I think it's John Barry, lyrics by Dan Black, and it's sung by Matt Monroe, not Andy Williams. Go ahead.
Born free, as free as the wind blows, as free as the grass grows, born free to follow your heart. Live free, and beauty surrounds you. The world still astounds you. It's time you look at a star. Stay free where no walls divide you. You're free as a roaring tide, so there's no need to hide. Born free, and life is worth living, but only worth living 'cause you're born free.
The chalice.
So the words I have to extinguish the chalice were actually written by Joanne. It's titled In Right Relationship with All Existence. As we extinguish our chalice, let us contemplate that it is the stopping in the paying attention that we can most deeply sense our connections to earth and life. It is during these quiet, reflective times that we can allow the joyfulness of being living creatures in a living universe to arise. It is during these times that we can safely confront our deepest fears and concerns for our earth and our future. May we renew our commitments to living in right relationship with all of existence.
First of all, if you hadn't guessed, I really, on my bucket list is I want to go to Africa. Okay, so it's my big thing. So as we end the service today, I hope that you got a feeling for pantheism, but also for the need that we have to connect with nature. So I urge you to take a moment, close your eyes. Imagine walking through a forest at dawn. What do you hear? What do you see? And what do you feel? And even what do you smell? And as you think about that, how do you feel now? As you leave here today, look around. Try to find just a small thing in nature that brings you joy, or causes you to wonder in awe, or brings you peace. Thank you. Now, Susan Hare will read our announcements.